an apostle of Jesus Christ, called by God, to the church that is in Corinth, to you who have been sanctified, called to be holy. I love that line. I really do. Whenever I was in seminary, anytime I'd come home for a visit, I'd remember visiting my friends, and there was always this recurring conversation that we avoided having. We always tried to steer clear of it, but every once in a while it would come up. Every once in a while I'd bring it up. I'd mention something along the lines of, why aren't they going to church? Or why aren't they living their Catholic faith? So many reasons, but it always came back with one thing with my friends. And I don't know why they'd say it this way, I really don't, but it always came back to the same couple of things. They'd always say, well, you know, I'm not like you. And I'd always have to ask, in what way do you mean you're not like me? And they'd always come up with the exact same words. And it bugged me every time. You know, holy, stuff like that. Those were their exact words every single time. And it bugged me. It bugged me genuinely, because when we look at this reading from Corinthians, it says something that so many times gets overlooked, so many times we lose sight of, so many times we lose track of. And it says, you who have been called to be holy. Paul's not writing just to priests or bishops or leaders of the church or just the popular people. He's writing to the church in Corinth. All of them are called to be holy. And he doesn't stop there. He says, and all those everywhere who call upon our Lord Jesus Christ. What we have here is a very clear reminder of the universal call to holiness. It is for all of us to be holy. The other challenge I face regularly is I'd always ask people, what do you think it is to be holy? What do you think it means to be holy? And I'm always fascinated by some of the answers that I've gotten from high schoolers. They're always an interesting lot to get an answer from, because I get curious things like, well, you know, the saints are holy. And I say, that's true, the saints are holy. What about the saints makes them holy? Well, they pray a lot. And that's true. I said, but is that what makes them holy? Well, maybe. Okay, well, what else makes them holy? Well, some of them eat really weird stuff. I said, it's not an eating contest, guys. That's not what makes us holy. He said, no. But they eat like just bread and water all the time. And I don't think we're that holy. And I have to ask, do you think it's the bread and water that makes the person holy? Because rest assured, I've met people who just eat bread and water. They're not holy. They're just angry, you know. They're just very frustrated. That doesn't necessarily make them holy. I said, do you think all the saints are holy? They say, yes. I say, well, great. What about St. Jerome? St. Jerome was mean sometimes. Sometimes he called people names. Sometimes he wrote angry letters. Do you still think he's holy? Well, he was a saint, so he had to be holy, right? Well, what makes us holy? What brings us in and calls to us that we have to be holy? And I think there's a genuine reminder to us that all of us are called to be holy. So what does that mean? Well, we've entered this time of ordinary time. We've come into this, you know, we're wearing green. I'm not wearing green just because I think it's a great color, because I don't. I like black, but, you know, it'd be a little more somber if I wore black all the time. Nobody, huh? Obviously, I've never seen any of you out in public. Anyway, we wear this green, we come to this ordinary time, not because it's boring. Not because we say ordinary, we don't mean uneventful, we don't mean boring, we don't mean pointless. We say ordinary because it's regular. And in the regular dailiness of life, in our constant ongoing day in and day out, We are called to be holy. Now, what does that mean? Well, part of it means our prayer. Part of it does mean our path of prayer and life of prayer, those things that we're doing. Part of it means how we live. How we live on a day-to-day basis. Not just in crisis, not just in the exceptional moments, not just doing fantastic at Christmas and Easter, but our daily life. Our day in and our day out daily life. And it doesn't have to look like anything fancy on the outside. It doesn't have to look like anything impressive from a distance. Our lives can look daily and unexciting from the outside. I always kind of think about it. If you ever get a chance to go to Paris, I was at Paris once, just once. And I got to go to the Cathedral of Notre Dame. And everybody knows it. It's, you know, it's the big cathedral. Everybody knows it. Everybody sees it. It's the big marker. And for me, that's like big saints. Everyone knows them. They recognize them. They can point them out. They go, oh yeah, that's someone called to be holy. There are big churches, Notre Dame. It's a big church. It's a beautiful church, inside and out. It's incredible. But you know, curiously enough, 1.5 blocks up a side alley, just a few blocks from Notre Dame, there's a door, and it doesn't look like anything. It's just an ordinary, unexciting door down an unexciting, dirty alley down a very busy street, or it's not a busy street, but a very busy city. It's unimpressive. But if you walk through that very unimpressive, unexciting door, you come into a narthex that opens into one of the most beautiful churches I have ever seen in my life. And it's just a couple of blocks from the cathedral. Now granted, it is not physically as large as the cathedral, but I tell you what, as I'm walking down the street, it just looks like another city street. But when you walk in, the roofs are as high as this place. I didn't see any steeples when I walked by. I didn't see any crests or high points when I walked by. But when I come in, just like this church, it opens up. It has incredible stained glass windows that open into themselves. There's little walls just beyond them, so you can't see them from the street. You have to go into the church to see them. It has incredible little chapels with relics from saints all over France. And it is always quiet. I mean, yeah, you get to hear an occasional baby crying, but there's something about the power of that silence. When I walk into that church, there's something incredibly beautiful about it, because you can almost feel God. I tell you what it means to be holy. What it means to be holy is for our daily life to not necessarily look all that impressive. We don't have to run around screaming it from the rooftops. We don't have to eat really weird things. But how we live our life, our interior, should be that close to God. That when someone comes into our interior, when someone gets to know us really well, that they step into something so intimately powerful that they know that we love God. That's what it means to be holy. To live a life in such a way that our exterior may not draw any attention at all, but our interior is so focused on God, so particularly focused on God, that there's never any doubt to anyone who knows us that that's what we live for. And we live for it in so many ways. It comes from our prayer. It comes from how we interact with people. It comes in how we make our judgments on day-to-day life, how we vote, how we do things in our everyday life. That's the call to holiness. That's our life of holiness. You know, this week we'll celebrate kind of a strange anniversary. This week we celebrate the very disturbing anniversary of the passing of Roe versus Wade. Washington, D.C. will be flooded with people. The news will downplay it. I've seen it happen. In January 2010, I walked down that street. I marched with the people for the pro-life march. And then I watched the news report that day. I don't know where the camera was that got so few people in that shot, but I saw a heck of a lot more people than that camera ever did. We give witness to something that our nation has looked the other way on for a very long time, a disturbingly long time. And it should frighten us to our very core that as a nation we have become indifferent about something like this. That instead of standing up and believing in something, instead of expressing our genuine desire for doing what's right, we try and disassociate and distance ourselves and say, well, I'm not doing it, but who am I to say what the other person is doing? We've become almost cold and distant about the whole thing. It's genuinely frightening to me. It's genuinely frightening. And I can throw out a lot of fancy numbers. I can throw out all the things that have happened. But in the end, whether we talk about the 55 million that we've lost, whether we talk about what that comes to on a daily number, I mean, the numbers are everywhere. We have crosses out in front of the school. Every single cross represents a million gone. If you drive by, it seems like it's over in a moment, but there's a lot of crosses there. The numbers are everywhere. There's a display in the back of church. You might not have seen it when you walk in. It's easy to miss. It's harder to miss on your way out. It's filled with shoes. I promise they're not that dirty. They don't smell that bad, but they are filled with shoes. It's 4,000 pairs of shoes. That's how many we lose on a daily basis to abortion. I can throw you numbers. I got lots of them. But in the end, I don't really think it comes down to the big numbers. I actually think it comes down to the little ones. What are we doing for our neighbor to encourage life? What are we doing about it in our family to encourage life? What are we doing in our own local area to stand up for life? To stand up for life in such a way that reminds us that we don't want to become indifferent, that we don't want to become casual, and that we do believe that life is precious, beginning to end, every last one of them. Life is precious. I can become angry, but I don't see how the anger is going to help. I can become sad, but unless it moves me to action, it still doesn't do anything. The great reminder to us is if we are truly called to be holy, if we're going to live a life for God, then that includes standing up for what's right. Not saying that it's not my problem because it's too distant from me. Not becoming disassociated with the whole process, but genuinely remembering that if it happens to us, and I mean to us in our nation, in our neighborhood, in our town, that while we may not consider ourselves directly involved, we should become indignant if it's something problematic. We need to stand for something. And this is something we need to stand for. I tell you, the number that scares me the most is when I think about a third of my generation is gone. For every two people I know my age, I should know another. And I don't make friends that easy, so that doesn't help me much. They're just gone. I never got a chance. I want my generation back. I'm not going to get it. But we shouldn't let this happen to another generation. Remember that all of us are called to be holy. All of us are called to live the life of God as He has given it to us. The question remains, what do we do now?